Are you happy, 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 baby?
You wanna play? You wanna play?
Are you happy, 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 baby? Happy, 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 baby?
Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your host, Jen and Joe.
Hey, everybody.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, good night. Whatever time of day you're listening to us.
Yeah. So, Jen, how you doing?
Well, I've had better weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it's been rough, but making it through the best I can.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
In the middle of conventions.
Convention season has started, mm-hmm. and you know, we're coming off of being in one of the most famously haunted locations, Mansfield Reformatory, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. But
we got a lot of things to do. And
amazing place, like just wow, can't even say enough about it.
Before we get started, we are sitting here with Harold and Becky. And we'll talk to them in a few seconds. But before we get going, I promised last week that I would mention something about Bigfoot.
Okay.
Really, the abominable snowman. I know. As you know, the term Bigfoot really was coined in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. There was an incident. And it's called the Ray Wallace Incident from Bluff Creek. And that was in 1958. Mm-hmm. So Ray Wallace was a construction worker at a construction site, obviously. And he went out and made footprints out of wood and was out walking around the construction site making fake footprints.
Why?
And the foreman, Jerry Crew, came out and found these footprints, called the news. Mm-hmm. The news came in, and it just blew up all over the news. And I believe that the news are the ones that coined the term Bigfoot.
Right.
So a lot of people say, well, Bigfoot wasn't even around before the 1950s. But as we know, there's stories from 8,000 years ago. I mean, the Japanese pottery that they found have pictures of Bigfoot on them. So I want to tell you about a story from 1840. Okay. There was a gentleman called Elkanah Walker. He was a missionary. Mm-hmm. And he spent a lot of time up in the Washington area. And he hung out with the Spokane Indian tribe. I'd like to read a little bit of his diary.
Okay.
And it says, "Bear with me as I trouble you with the story of their superstitions. The Spokane believe that of a race of giants who live among the top of the mountains just west of here. A mountain that is perpetually covered in snow. There lies a tribe of giants who inhabit the snow peaks and hunt at night. They're men stealers.
Like they steal me some men.
They come into the villages at night and steal the men as they sleep. They put them under their skins and take them back up to the mountains. Their track is about a foot and a half long. They come down and steal the fish out of nets, eat them raw as the bear does. If the people are awake, they can always tell when they are coming by their strong smell that is most intolerable. It is not uncommon for them to come into the night, give three whistles, and then the stones will start hitting the houses." So that is from 1840. And that's pretty much the same thing that happens now. They talk about the stench, and they talk about the whoops, and then the stones that they throw.
Maybe now, they talk about it now, because those stories have been passed down generation after generation.
And people, like you had that incident in Tennessee where all of a sudden some stones were come flying down onto the houseboat.
Yep.
So who knows? That's from 1840.
All right, great.
But I said I was going to say that this week, so I did.
There you go.
All right, let's introduce our guests.
All right.
This is really exciting.
And with us we have, from Toledo, Ohio, Ghost Hunter Society.
I'm wearing the shirt.
And Joe is wearing the Togue shirt.
And the only reason I'm wearing the shirt today is because I don't have any clean laundry. Yeah. And I wore this yesterday to the park.
No. Likes to advertise. Welcome, Becky and Harold.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in today. So
it's been a long time.
It's been a little minute.
It's an honor to be back in your studio, Joe and Jen. It's nice to, first and foremost, it's nice to see you guys again.
Yeah, nice to see you guys.
So we brought you in today because you have a very interesting case that, you know, this has been a long-term case for you guys. It isn't one that has recently been going on, but it has been going on for many years. And I think people don't realize that when you do personal investigations, it's just not an overnight thing. You're committing to a case and you are, you know, it could be a month, 2 months, a year, or many years to be able to, you know, help a family or location that has been having paranormal activity that either scares them or they're frightened of or they just feel that they need help with. So this is in my neighborhood, close to my hood. So, you know, maybe you can just tell us a little background of the story of it, with whatever you would like to share or that you can share on this particular case, because I think it's really fascinating and I think people have to have a better understanding of what really goes into, you know, when you do a residential case.
Well, in this particular case, excuse me, this is one of those rare cases that I think you have, and I agree with you, Jen. A lot of the cases that we've taken under our belt over the years, we are still in constant contact with the clients, and some of them become lifelong friends. This case has some of those same similarities, but there's a lot of differences in this particular case. This, we first contact was in, I think, of the fall of 2012.
Yeah.
And I can say their names, the clients Ian and Molly. Some of the claims of the paranormal activity that was going on in the house, in my opinion, was outrageous. Becky, as you know, is our case manager. And maybe she can help us first. I think they made contact with us by phone at first. And some of the claims that was going on, especially some of the attacks that was happening to Molly at the time, we didn't have a whole lot of time to do a lot of research on this particular property. We were, if I remember, you said we have to get there and get there now. So I think we showed up within 3 days at Ian and Molly's home. And I want to say a little bit about this, and then Becky can tell you at the beginning, and I'll take us into this house a little bit. Something I've learned over the past 8 years, this house sits just outside of the Five Points area. And Joe, you and I have had hundreds of conversations about hauntings and Bigfoot, by the way.
Yeah.
This house sits just outside of the Five Points area. And every time over the course of our investigations, within a week or two, if we get a call from a home within the Five Points area, we get follow-up calls by other people within the same week or two. So every time we have an investigation of Five Points area, we can always sure as heck plan on doing three investigations. And this house was just like that with claims of the paranormal. So we showed up on location, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about, once we got on location, what were you thinking?
Well, there were a lot of claims. You know, Molly had been held out in bed. She had been pushed down in the shower. She is seeing things, hearing things. The reason I wanted to get in there so fast, because she's just, whether you're a skeptic or not, when you're talking to somebody on the phone, she was very frightened. Mm. She would come home and sit in her car for hours and then run into the house right before her husband got home. Practically when he was driving down, she was afraid to be in her own home alone. It was really sad. We didn't really know what we were
up against,
what we were walking into. And like Harold said, we didn't do we started, you know, the background information, and we didn't get everything in, which, you know, when we did, that kind of answered a lot of questions for us.
I think when we got there, my first impression of Ian and Molly, I was very impressed. They were a young couple, newly married within a year or two. This was their home, the very first home that they were going to purchase. The house itself, I think, was built in the late 1920s. They had just purchased this home, just moved in. I think they had a cat and a dog, a perfect little family. But they weren't there long. My first impression of Ian is a highly intelligent man, very, very good at microbrewing, takes it very serious. Molly is a wonderful woman, very passionate about horses and riding horses and training. I remember talking to you, Becky, how passionate she was about gardening and actually growing monarch butterflies from the caterpillar all the way to the, and then setting them free to go back to, I think, Mexico somewhere. Yeah. But everything they did well, and they were passionate about life, and it's just kind of a sad, kind of a horrible story at that time. We were really worried about them.
And you know, that is the only place that I've ever walked into. I don't ever have feelings or any kind of psychic abilities. I've never felt anything really one way or the other when I walk into a home. That house just felt dark. It looked dark. The air just looked gray, and it just felt dark.
Wow. Well, I remember when we got in there, we had kind of looked at each other, and we kind of have a system the way we do things. Becky will sit down with the clients, and she'll begin to talk about all the things that's going on, some of the claims, while Butch, our founder, will do some baseline readings and roam the house and check the windows, the, you know, the air ducts, the wiring and things of that nature. That way we can begin our debunking process, you know, right there during the interview. The house had a weird feel to it. And it was much more than, I mean, the big claims, like Becky had said, Molly was pushed down the stairs on several occasions. She was being scratched. The one night she was held down in bed and choked. And if I remember right, Ian had to take her to the hospital right before her eyes. The bruising and the choke marks of the hands around her neck were beginning to show. She was also attacked in the shower several times. They began to see a shadow figure. So things went from immediately the first day moving in that their car keys and stuff were being moved. Is it paranormal? I don't know.
Yeah.
But they thought it was strange. But very quickly rose to shadow people, voices.
Escalated.
They had, one night she was held down and choked in bed again. And when she woke up, once she could get her breath back, she saw what she claimed as a 10-year-old Asian boy standing at the foot of her bed. That same boy was seen by friends throughout the house, the footsteps, the running, balls rolling down the stairs in the attic. So I think at that time their claims was that there had to have been a child in the house, but something much darker than that. And it was, it was messing with Ian. Ian was beginning to hear things and see things as well, but Molly was flat out being physically attacked. Do you remember all that?
Yeah.
Do you feel like, you know, sometimes the darker entities, do they mask as children?
Yeah, that's what I was
saying. And appear to women.
I just wrote that down.
To play on. Oh, sorry, John.
No, that's fine.
I stole his question.
That's fine.
But, you know, do you feel that in this case that may have been the case? That
I don't know. I think it may be two separate entities because we intentionally evicted who we thought was responsible for the haunting and a child spirit still remains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did Molly have any connection to a 10-year-old Asian boy? No.
Yeah. And I think.
Did she have any antiques or anything you think?
Oh, their house was full of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we always think, you know, do they bring something into the house? Is it something to do with the area?
Things can follow you home from someplace too. I mean, that happens to us as paranormal investigators. Why can't it happen to somebody else who just someone takes a liking to you and they follow you around for a while? Maybe they won't stay, but.
And who knows what, you know, and me and her were talking about this before, is we were going to actually try to do an investigation of the area itself.
Yes,
you know, because
I absolutely agree with that.
Five Points has so much activity.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be something, either a conduit or something.
And we need to really start logging all the dates of these calls and try to see, you know what I mean? The, you know, they usually are in the fall, but every 2-3 years, the Five Points light up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the research that we did do, you know, in the years that's followed this case, there is something to the Five Points area. I don't know, for people that may be local that are listening, it's bordered by Lasky, Jackman, North Detroit, LaGrange, but it's more than that, Joe, what I found out here as of late. It's now reaching outside the Five Points area to maybe a half a mile up to a mile outside these perimeters. Yeah. I firmly, and this is just my theory, I don't know how much of your listeners know about ley lines or energy grids or faults or things of that nature, but there's a magnetic ley line and energy grid that's used for even for GPS and aviation, and it's everywhere. If you check these maps, and there's not a lot of information you could pull up on this, but one of the points of reference states Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah.
And it's always been commonly known, and everybody that's ever investigated Woodlawn Cemetery always says, well, there's a ley line that runs through there. I cannot pinpoint it. I mean, a ley line is not something you could see, like a painted line going down the middle of the road. But there's a measure of truth to this. We were, at one time we shut off, and this was in the Five Points area as well, we shut off the main at a house to make sure we were not getting any readings. And we were standing at a location within the house at the exact spot where they kept seeing an apparition. And we were standing there, and I believe it was either Butch or Dan is using the EMF meter. And when he began to communicate with this entity, it spiked to an 8.7 uh-huh. out of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you could almost feel it. Mm-hmm. And as we're talking about the Maxwell haunting, there was a time, and you're talking about this energy, I was standing in the home alone. And I can't wait to tell you about the 72-hour lockdown. That was kind of strange. But there was a boom. I mean, a big boom in the house. It sounded to me like either a boulder, a bowling ball, or a big rock was dropped on a hardwood floor. Is this that energy release?
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist by any by any means, and I've never studied this in great detail. But everything I'm learning, there's something to these energy grids. As we all know, you know, around quarries, quartz and limestone can all absorb this energy. And it can be released at a later time.
Yeah.
And I think this has a lot to do with this home and the Five Points area. I think it plays a role in this. And I want to get back to that. So
yeah.
If your listeners ever want to, and maybe they could comment as if they listen to the show at a later date, if anybody knows anything about ley lines, you know, I'm always a student, and I want to learn more about these ley lines and what role does it play in the paranormal? Because I think it plays a key role. I think it's a major factor in what we're trying to do as investigators. So,
and one of the things I wanted to mention real quick is in the middle of Five Points is a well. It's where Cherry Street and Collingwood all that come together, and it's called a Hope Well. And we've talked about this many times on the show. That was a gathering point for the Hopewell Indians. Yeah.
It was a trade route.
And if you were to put a line from there to downtown to the Hopewell Indian Mounds, which are almost by the Indiana border, it's a straight line that goes right through Five Points.
Isn't it strange, Joe, that even to this day, they haven't built on that property. They're building around it. It's still kind of an altar, so to speak. It's still there for everybody to see. Mm-hmm. I don't know why there's not a lot more information out in the, you know, on any of the, you know, Google or any of the search engines. There should be.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot to learn about them. I mean, if you think about it, that's what GPS works by, and aviation uses it. Why are we being taught more about it? I just think when it comes to the paranormal field and energy grids and ley lines, these things can play a major role in houses that are being fed or energized, just like the Maxwell. Mm-hmm. Joe, there was times, as we briefly talked about this Maxwell haunting, that house went peacefully quiet. It was just quiet, and the clients were doing great. And then it began to awaken again. And we could tell that it was awakening because we would first and foremost hear back from Ian and Molly, but within a day or two, the ghost office phone would ring.
Yeah.
And someone would say they live on Eleanor. And I would look at Becky and I'd go, we're going to get another one tomorrow. And sure as heck, another call would come in. And a lot of the claims were the same. I mean, it's not all bad and dark, but rest assured there's paranormal activity that has awakened in these homes. So.
And I want to definitely look into this more. And like we were discussing about actually doing an investigation and try to find those magnetic ley lines somehow out there and see if they do come right through where we're talking.
And another thing would be map the ley lines, but also map the creeks and the water that goes around here, because I know, you know, energy moves through water. And, you know, West Toledo, this was a swamp, right? So there's water moving, and, you know, it could be something that's flowing, like right behind Joe's house. Here's a creek here. I know there's one that goes from...
Yes, I live in waterfront property.
Yeah. Makes it extra special. And then the one that there is a creek that runs behind DuPont, you know, behind where I live. So, you know, that would be an interesting thing if something's flowing along the water lines well.
It's funny, Jen, that you say that.
Oh, here we go.
It's funny that you say that, because here's something else I've learned. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Oliver House, if you look at Tony Packo's, if you look at the old Lynx Inn, if you look at some of these, and Toledo has its legendary hauntings.
Oh, yeah.
And I think maybe these ley lines have a lot to do with this. But if you look at our most famous hauntings here in Toledo, they're by the Maumee River. Mm-hmm. They're by water.
Yep.
Every single last one of them that are big haunted places, either that They're either A, by water, or B, I think, laying on ley lines, built on top of them.
Speaking about downtown with the Oliver House and all that, there was a 200-foot mound that was full of bones that they tore apart to build downtown Toledo. And we all know bones are still underneath the parking lot of the Oliver House.
Well, and think of all the fighting that took place there back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people died along those shores.
Yeah. And that's
so you take all that in together and you...
Yeah. And that's what, like, I was thinking why this ramps up every so many years. I wonder if it was a, like, every 3 years they all meet or something like that. Mm-hmm. And maybe the spirits are still traveling those routes like they did, like the stone tape theory in Rock.
Did you announce to your listeners where the site is, where they can visit this, where the ley lines cross, where you said the well is? Did you tell everybody where it sits?
Yeah. The well, yeah. We've mentioned a few times. It's if you go to Google and look up Toledo, go to where Cherry Street, Collingwood, is it LaGrange?
It's
Phillips.
Phillips Haver, Haverhill. Haverhill runs through there. I don't know the exact spot.
And if you're looking at Google under satellite view, you'll see two roundabouts put together. It's right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Visitors. Which is circles.
Circles again, which is 5 points. The five roads coming in. And
Well, I definitely, Joe, Jen, I definitely think that there's a lot of hauntings that's linked to this, but more importantly, I think this has everything to do with the Maxwell haunting.
Yeah.
So, and I'll get.
So let's get back into the Maxwell haunting then.
So Becky and I arrive with Butch, and Butch is doing the baseline readings and trying to debunk as many things as we can, and Becky's sitting with the clients, and like I've already explained to you guys what I personally felt about Ian and Molly. I fell in love with them instantly.
Yeah.
And I felt a need to react as quickly as I could. I wanted to help them in the worst and worst way. I couldn't wait to get in there. Well, some of the claims, we also had to take some precautions. And before we went in there, we went in there on a rush. I didn't have a full crew. Becky was gone for the first half of that investigation. At the time, I had taken my nephew Joey, who works with me. I think you guys have even met him. My son Christopher, who's a very good investigator, doesn't get an opportunity to do it much, but so I took Joey and Chris, Butch was with me, Michelle, I think, and myself. We investigated for about 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, as any investigation goes on, you learn as you go.
Yeah.
So you're not always right. You're not always doing the best things at that particular time. So we settled in. We set up some DVR cameras. We got in. We were doing our investigations. We investigated for probably 4 or 5 hours. We were starting to get tired, and I was becoming confused. We weren't getting anything. Lo and behold, we were going to analyze later, listen to see our recorders and watch our audio and video. I didn't feel that we were getting anything. The house seemed to be very quiet, to a point where I was frustrated that I may not be able to help these people. I didn't understand, with all the horrific claims that was going on a daily basis, I didn't understand. I was just about to wrap up that Ian and Molly left the home that night. So about 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was, Ian had finally arrived back home just as I was ready to wrap up, and he walked in with a buddy of his. Well, just before that, Becky had showed up at the investigation. I wanted her to show up no matter how late it was, so she had stopped by. Ian and his friend walked into the garage. We had the tech out in the garage detached from the house. I didn't want the house contaminated in any way. Ian's friend had turned around to Becky, and Becky was standing facing the tech table, so he was looking at the backside of Becky, and he said, hey, Molly, how are you? Becky turned around, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry. You look just like Molly. Well, not always the best decision in the world, but, you know, as a seasoned investigator, a light bulb came on. I looked at Butch. Butch looked at me, and we both knew what we were going to ask Becky to do.
Oh, no.
And something dawned on me, Joe, as I'm sitting in tech and frustrated reading these claims. All the bad things were happening to Molly, and most of them when Ian wasn't home.
Okay.
Well, what's any good paranormal investigator do at that time? I fill up my coffee, and I send Becky in the house alone. And I wanted to try to debunk things. And by debunking some things, you have to recreate some things and put your investigators in the same position that maybe the client was in at one time. So Becky's kind of brave, and I think it's better coming from her than it is me. But there was three things that I wanted to target because I was worried about Molly. The holding her down in bed and choking her to a point that she was choked out scared me to death.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows, Jen, and you being a woman as well, how private a shower is for a woman. Right. Could you imagine being a woman and somebody enters the bathroom when you know nobody's home and the shower curtains begin to move, the growling begins, and then you're pushed? She was petrified. I don't believe she was even taking a shower in the home anymore. Mm-hmm. There was also claims of this little boy that I just couldn't get it off my mind. I wanted to try to document him. And he was said to be running the hallways, running in the attic, and they could hear him giggling from time to time. So those three things I wanted to try to recreate. Butch and I had asked Becky if she would mind going in, that we would be monitored under camera and stuff. And I think it's best coming from you. But you would, I think the first place you went up to right off the bat was the bedroom.
Right. I decided to do, you know, those the bedroom, the bathroom, and the office is where she heard the little boy giggling. Started out with the bedroom, and I laid on the bed and got myself settled and just barely started talking when the bed broke.
Oh.
You know, at the time, you don't necessarily first think paranormal.
Yeah.
Right. And we certainly would not use that as evidence of anything. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that before that, Joey, we have him on video literally jumping on that bed at, like, I don't know, 275-pound guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and rolling around on it. Right. Other people had been on that bed. Everybody laid on that bed and tried to get a reaction. So that was kind of weird.
Well, at the time, you didn't know that. Us working at tech, we knew it because mm-hmm. we were the ones videotaping right. it. So we didn't know whether to go in and say, hey, Becky, you need to get out of the house. She didn't think it was paranormal at the time. She just thought, geez, the bed broke. We all downstairs at tech were all looking at each other going, what the heck? Because everybody knows I'm probably 180 pounds. I laid on that bed. Michelle, okay, I'm on radio, so nobody can prove what I weigh. Joey, who's much heavier than me, we all laid on that bed, daring Maxwell to hold us down, to choke us. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but at that time, we did know it was paranormal. We thought very much it was. You were the one that just weren't aware that we had did that.
So next I went to the office where I did get a recording of child giggling. And so the final stop was the bathroom, and I got into the shower and I turned the water on in the sink, just kind of simulate. I wasn't going to turn the water on in the shower for sure. And I was just talking, you know, and kind of towards the end, you know, I was kind of challenging this entity about pushing, you know, Molly while she's in the shower, and I said, you can push me if you want. And I did not get pushed, but I got in a kind of a menacing EVP.
Wow. Well, and I think you downplay that. She wasn't at that time, wasn't in the house all by herself. At that time, we sent Butch into the videotape. If I may be so bold, and I won't use the foul language, but you're kind of acting really cool and casual as you're sitting here. She was daring.
Okay, you want me to say it? Can I say a bit?
No, I don't. I wouldn't say the bad word. But
let her say it.
All right, go ahead. Let her rip.
Why are you fucking him?
Oh, my
Only it was way creepier than that. Yeah. I can imagine a very good voice for that.
Well, and here's the thing that I realized at the time. You was, maybe to a certain extent, provoking, but more importantly, you were dressing.
I was not aggressively provoking, right. though.
Okay.
I was
you were challenging. Challenging. I think is the word that
she was
said,
addressing
yeah.
Maxwell one-on-one. And when you were laying in the bed, if you were the one that held Molly down and choked her, why don't you choke me?
Yeah.
And that's when the bed broke. Everything you did is when you were addressing him one-on-one and challenging him to do the same things to you that he had done onto Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of got a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
And the you know, the difference is Molly wasn't knowledgeable about this. And you have, you know, a long history of dealing with these kind of things and know your limits with, okay,
right.
I'm going to reach out to this entity and see what it, you know, what it can do. And it almost like it was, you're calling its bluff because, you know, it didn't get as aggressive with you as it did with somebody who's a little bit more vulnerable, who doesn't have the skill set of the paranormal investigation.
Or no, mm-hmm. you know, people have different personalities and
more
make
sensitive.
Them more of a victim.
Yeah.
you know. Yeah.
Definitely, and the element of surprise.
Yeah,
true.
There's nothing worse than being in total darkness and you can't see your hand in front of your face, and you're going downstairs to get a drink of water in the middle of the night, and you're shoved down a flight of stairs. Now, if Becky was at the top of the stairs saying, you shoved her down the stairs, you could shove me. By all accounts, she's going to have one hand on the rail.
Right, exactly. She's going to be holding onto the railing pretty tightly.
Yeah, but consciously or subconsciously, you're going to brace yourself to be pushed.
Yeah.
The things that were happening to Molly, she wasn't provoking.
Just out of the blue.
It was out of the blue and once again out of the darkness. That's a different ballgame, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah.
So,
how long after they purchased this house or moved into the house did the activity start happening?
It's funny, and I've talked to Ian 1,000 times. It started out very low key. Mm-hmm. One of the first things that was happening is car keys. They have a ritual when they walk into the foyer. They have a little shelf right there. That's where the car keys go. Mm-hmm. A ritual, just like everybody does. I mean,
yeah, I'm everybody sure has one space. You always put
my car keys are usually in the couch cushion or under the couch. That's where I keep them. But most people have a place for them.
Yeah,
and they did. Right when he was getting ready to get up in the morning to go to work, the car keys would be gone. So it was little things, but subtle things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like you would think, oh, I just forgot and I put them over
here. They would
be
in the living room watching a movie, eating popcorn, and they would hear the kitchen cupboard doors open and close. They would hear dishes begin to rattle. So it started off like that, but it grew rapidly, quickly. It was just within a matter of a couple of weeks of being in the house that it began to escalate where, now I thought I saw something. Okay, well, now I know I heard something.
Yeah.
And then quickly after that, it got physical. And mostly with Molly.
Yeah.
But it affects everybody. Mm-hmm. And so what we did there is we wrapped up that investigation. You asked an interesting question. It was hard to go back for the reveal. Mm-hmm. Becky being the case manager is usually the first contact. She'll usually set up, after we're all done analyzing, she'll set up the reveal with the clients. I had kept in constant contact every day with Ian, monitoring what was happening next. And as we were analyzing, things were still going on and escalating.
Mm.
We weren't quite sure what we were going to do. Do you remember sitting down at that dining room table, how it bothered me?
Yeah.
I was afraid to show them Becky being assaulted in the shower. I was afraid to show them, even though they knew the bed broke. And I had to tell Ian, your bed's broke.
But, you know, it is important also for the person that is experiencing this activity to have some kind of validation.
Right.
You know, I mean, that is really important.
Oh, yeah.
It was upsetting to me, if you remember. I said, first of all, Joe, Jen, you guys have been paranormal investigators, too. You have to be honest with the client.
Mm-hmm.
If you get something really bad, you have to show it.
If you get
nothing at all, you have to tell them nothing at all.
The fact that Ian was not experiencing any activity with any intensity at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And all this was happening to her. You know, maybe there's a part of her that thinks he doesn't understand that it's this serious, doesn't accept that it's this serious. And
well, me being
it's
the
important
guy,
that come out that this is serious. This is something very negative in your home.
Do you remember I said, maybe Ian's not experiencing these horrible things because Ian's kind of a big man. Ian's probably 6'4". He's a big man. And I thought, there's got to be something to that.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't it right shortly you had did a criminal background check on Maxwell? And
didn't have that information back when we went in to do the investigation. We found out after the fact that he had gotten into some trouble. He had anti-stalking orders against him.
Oh, okay.
A restraining order against him. Mm-hmm.
There was all kinds of crimes against women.
Trouble.
And furthermore, once your investigation opens up, you interview neighbors and family members and things of that. We started to talk to the neighbors. This Maxwell, the entity that we were going after, that once we found out that there was a gentleman in that house that was troubled, the neighbors were petrified of him. They were scared to death of him. The little girl that lived a couple of doors down, who's now obviously 8 years older, said, I called him Mr. Creepy. He would just stare at me, and when I would say hi, he would just continue to stare at me. And I don't want to get into that because over the years, it's not fair to talk bad about the deceased.
Yeah.
We also learned, I might as well just kind of say it. He was attacking women.
Okay.
He had restraining orders against him. He had anti-stalking orders against him. The neighbors stayed away from him. In the purest form, as Becky said, he was a bully. He lived in that home. And obviously suffered from addictions and obviously mental illness, and he took his own life. He had committed suicide in the cellar. He had had a drum set set up, and he was living with his grandmother at the time. It was actually his grandmother's house, and I don't want to get too much into this, so I won't mention any names. I think even some of his own family members were very fearful of him, and they don't think they knew what to do with him, so grandma kind of took him in. I'm not sure what happened with his relationship with him and his grandma, but I can only tell you another short story that from a couple of years later when I was addressing this particular topic is when something was thrown and Becky's eyeglasses were shattered. The one thing about this case, right off the bat from investigation one, we knew we were dealing with a very dark, negative energy. And I didn't want to confuse it because obviously Molly was thinking demonic. Mm-hmm. It's so hard that I was trying to give her a gray area. Maybe it's not. And I was trying to explain to her Einstein's theory of energy and, you know, higher and faster is probably good. Lower and slower is probably bad. And this is somewhere down at the bottom ring of this. But I don't think it's, and I'm hoping that it's not demonic, because but bad things are happening. So I think we were worried and concerned that it possibly could be. So I was kind of tickled to find out this information, if that makes any sense, because at that point it made sense to me. We're dealing with a very dark person that everybody that even encountered him was petrified of him. So that's what we targeted. We had went back for another investigation. Some of the same things were happening. We had did a house cleansing and a blessing, Michelle Maddox, our tranquility specialist, who does a great job, and it works 90% of the time. The house went quiet. Molly was no longer being attacked. The house got lighter. I remember even the one time the walls were oozing this oil substance, claw marks on the door.
Okay.
Joe, as if something was trying to get out, not in.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was just so many creepy. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on about some of the claims that we finally documented ourselves. I mean, everything that they were saying was coming to light and was happening to even our own investigators. I was so tickled and relieved that after we did our reveal and we talked every other day with the clients, and we gave them sage and house blessing kits and tried to stay with them and holy water from the Jordan River and everything that we could to keep throwing at this house. And Ian and Molly began to bless the house on a regular basis. And things did get better. And things did go quiet. And then I remember us getting a call from off of Eleanor.
Yeah.
And I turn around to Beck and I go, oh my God, it's the 5 points.
Yeah.
And then right after that, remember, we got another call from another location, which I really can't say the address there.
That's fine. Yeah.
Boom. Guess who called? Ian.
Yeah.
Harold, I don't want to bother you. And I've tried to keep this hush-hush, and I've tried to blessing, and I've been working really hard the last couple of weeks. I said, Ian, what do you mean the last couple of weeks? The activity's ramping again. We're hearing things. We're seeing things. The child's been seen again. I'm hearing voices this time. He said, I was sitting in the living room, and this makes no sense, Harold. It's like I went back in time. I saw apparitions. I heard music. It was Christmas time. I saw where the Christmas tree was. The music's beautiful, but am I going crazy, Harold? By the time we got there, do you remember when we got there? The house was, as Becky said earlier, a dark green. Mm-hmm. Joe, Jen, you could see it.
Oh,
you could feel it. You know me, I'm a documenter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing's paranormal until I say it's paranormal.
Yeah, until you have evidence.
Right. I want I want the meat and potatoes in my hands. I turned to Becky and I said, maybe I think Ian and Molly know this. I turned around and I said, one of them's going to die.
Oh, Ian or
Becky? Remember we were roaming through the house and I was trying to do baseline reading, which was absolutely ridiculous. We've done that 100 times.
Yeah.
I already knew. I went upstairs. I came downstairs. I told Becky, it's going to jump out and get me. I got the creeps. I got to go outside. I told her, how many times have I been afraid?
I was
scared to death.
Haven't been.
And it was only briefly. It was like an anxiety attack. It was like I stopped breathing. I had to get out of this house. Here's the bottom line, and I'm going to have you jump in again because I don't want to, really drive this too far, but I might as well just say it. Ian felt like he was crazy, and he looked crazy. He wasn't.
They both looked terrible. They looked just
terrible. I'll explain Ian in a nutshell. He had microbrewed in a year. Molly says he doesn't do anything. He doesn't go for his walks. This guy could sit down and open up a beer, Joe, and tell you a story about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how passionate he is. Yeah. And so much into details. He was lost, depressed. Molly said he would sit on the couch and let him stare off into space for hours at a time. He was having nightmares and visions of killing Molly.
Oh.
Or killing himself. Their animals all died. Remember, she was so passionate about her dogs, and I think her guinea pig and her cat, all the animals were dying. All of natural causes, all with under a year.
Oh, wow.
I was so upset that Ian didn't reach out to me sooner. Molly was a train wreck, a depression like I've never seen. It was hard to even get her to communicate with me anymore. And I'm trying to tell you, I was so close to these people. We were like family. Maybe you could describe Molly. You're a woman. I'm a guy. I'm saying, but she looked like a train wreck to me.
She looked beat down and exhausted and about 5 years older.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, I get it. I totally understand. I mean, you know, these entities that are out there, even if you have a little bit of weakness, right? Like you're scared, you're depressed, anxiety, it will get in and it will suck the life force out of you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Like I've experienced it myself. You know?
I know.
Jen?
Yeah.
Like I said, I turned around to Becky and I said, I'm afraid. And one of these two is going to be dead very quickly if we don't react now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Molly turned around and I said, Molly, how are you? Are you okay? It's kicking me. I have bruises up and down my legs.
Oh, physically?
Yes. It's back. I was absolutely shocked. I was praying and hoping to God that the house cleansings and blessings worked. We went back, obviously. And this is a questionable call, and some of your listeners may disagree. At that point, do you do another investigation? Do you call the priest? Do you call the church? Do you call a psychic? What the hell do you do?
Yeah.
But I'm also compassionate with Ian saying, and something inside Ian was driven. I want to know who this is. There's more than one here. There's more than just Maxwell here. There's other things. You got to help me. And he turned around to Becky on several occasions and Butch, I'm not sure we should do this. I'm not even comfortable now doing this. We're going into this house and we're communicating with these horrible people in this house. And it wasn't all horrible, Joe. The child may have still been there. There was a woman that seemed to be lost roaming the house and you could hear her from time to time. But this shadow figure that stood outside their doorway of their bedroom on a nightly basis, just staring and stalking them. And then when Molly would get up to go somewhere, Joe would kick her. I mean, kick her out of the blue. It would grab her, try to shove her down the stairs again. For better or worse, and maybe some of our ego on the line, I'm not sure. Maybe I was compelled to do this. Maybe I was consumed with it as well.
No, you were asked to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you're the lead team, and with you and Butch, but you lead investigator on this team.
Yeah.
So,
and you know the history.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, on a much lighter note, as everybody that knows me, we went back for this next investigation.
Yeah.
I poured myself a nice cup of coffee and told everybody I was working tech that night. I said Becky and one of our new members, Carmen Cosmeter, who's a great lady, great investigator. We went down to the basement where the suicide had taken place. And we all knew what we were going to do and who we were going to address again. I began to talk to his grandmother, addressing some of the things that may have happened and some of his other family members. I wanted to know more about this Maxwell. There had to be something to it besides the mental illness, the drug addictions, and this darkness in him that he wanted to hurt every woman that was around him. So I said, Carmen and Becky, and why don't you tell us what happened in the basement?
Well, a couple things happened simultaneously. Three things, actually. We heard a very loud bang, and I was using a 360 mic and wearing headphones, so I could not tell which direction it came from. Mm-hmm. So we immediately stood up, turned on the lights. We were looking for something that was thrown, something with weight, because it was a very loud bang. It couldn't be confused with anything other than something smashing off a wall or something or the floor in that basement. We could find nothing out of place. Jeff was at tech, and like we had just gotten up, we were looking around the room, And he knocked on the door and he said, oh, your camera just went out. Well, the camera died completely and never worked again. And I had my glasses on top of my head and I pulled them down and Hero's like, your glasses are cracked. When did that happen? I'm like, it must have just happened because I've been wearing them tonight. I had them flipped up on my head out of the way when I, you know, had the headphones and stuff on. And it was just, I felt nothing.
Do you think that noise could have been that entity coming in or out of that space?
It's possible.
It's like a sonic boom almost.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking. Yeah. Some kind of psychic energy.
Yeah.
You know, that created psychic the boom. Noise, shattered the glasses, mm-hmm. I mean, and killed the camera at the same time.
Because you know that high-pitched noises or low frequency will shatter glass. Interesting.
Low frequency is a lot to do with the negative entity, too.
Correct. I spent 72 hours in a lockdown in this home just recently, and I encountered that same boom. I was standing in the house alone. It sounded like a bowling ball. It dropped from the second floor to the first floor on a hardwood floor. I think it is a sonic boom. I think it. I cannot prove this to anybody, so anybody, I guess, can challenge what I'm saying. I'm trying to study as fastly, as quickly as I can and learn as much as I can about this. There's something to this. That night, I had a $350 64 IR light camera. I was proud of that camera, as everybody's in the paranormal field will understand.
Our gadgets.
This camera can see 100 feet down a very dark hallway and light it up like it's a beautiful sunny day in Miami Beach. I was pissed it broke my camera. I have no idea. We never did find that object that was thrown at Joe. It had to be a Buick. You couldn't have missed it.
Yeah.
I don't know what shattered her eyeglasses. I think it has something to do with these ley lines and this energy that's being fed into this home.
Yeah.
This particular home is being fed energy like no other home surrounding it. There's a reason for it. Well, anyways, that was our second investigation. Once again, how do you go back to the clients who are now suffering from depression? The house is eerie dark. The animals are dying. And how do you tell them it's back?
Yeah. Which they already know because of
all. Right. Yeah. They didn't need us to tell them anything.
But you just tell them. That's just it.
Yeah. We did. We set up immediate, what we call an eviction. Other people call it other things, house cleansing, blessings. You can call it many things.
Well, we did house cleansing and blessing followed by an eviction, which is a totally different. The one shakes it loose and the other sweeps it out the door, basically.
And so about an hour into the eviction, things seem to be going well. Once again, Michelle Maddox does our evictions. Becky was there to document under video. I'm kind of there to make sure, believe it or not, that the girls are protected.
While you're out with your coffee.
I'm out of the porch. Sorry,
I'll throw my coffee cup at them.
Hey, you could ask Becky. I went out of the porch and had a smoke and a coffee. I just tapped on the window. Hey, you girls okay in there?
I just kept giving them that look.
I thought it was important that we documented this. I mean, at this point, we're documenting every time we go in the house. If I was walking in the house, I had a video camera rolling. The house couldn't be trusted anymore. And Molly was so sick at this time, and Ian was just not him. He was not the same man that I have known. We've captured the evidence. We go back to do the eviction. About an hour into the eviction, things seemed to be going well. All of a sudden, Molly turns blue.
Molly turned gray.
Well, gray-blue, including her lips. She said, I don't feel well. The horrid smell of rotting flesh is what Ian claimed in the video.
And as a...
Molly went down. Big bruise on her leg. She was kicked. Her feet were kicked out from underneath her.
Oh.
And you could see that mark appearing on her leg.
Oh,
it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything like that personally.
Well, we've been doing this for a long time.
You hear about things, but I've never personally seen that.
Even though we'd done this for a long time, we were beginning to see things that we've never seen before. So, here's the funny thing, Joe and Jen. This house is a teacher.
Yeah,
we were learning on the fly from a very strict teacher,
and we got a good EVP that night too.
Yeah, but more importantly,
addressing Harold.
Yeah,
I'm coming to effing get you.
Yeah, I was wearing headphones, much like you're wearing.
Yeah,
at the time that
I would
that, well, let's put this into thought, because at that time he wasn't talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Molly had went down. Joe, Jen, the first thought in my mind was when I call 911. How am I going to tell them? We have a client that just passed away. She got attacked by a ghost, and I'm a ghost hunter.
Yeah.
I'm going to jail.
And that's what I was thinking too is, you know, you were like, I predicted this.
Yeah.
I mean, you thank said God. It. You
know? Thank God. She came back too a couple of minutes later. We got her out of the house. Obviously out of the house as quickly as possible for she could kind of get her bearings back together and get some fresh air in her. You could see the fear in her eyes. It was, Joe, I don't know if you've ever encountered anybody that has that kind of fear in their eyes, and you're looking at them. It's a different look.
Yeah.
It's indescribable. So there's no sense me even trying to describe to you what that was like.
Well, it's heartbreaking. It is. And
especially in the situation where you actually see her turn color.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you basically see the life go out of her.
You just feel like there's not a darn thing you can do about it at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, because you can't grab a ghost in.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Another
lesson. You can't fight them the way they can fight us, you know?
Another lesson that I learned for myself that day was, I've always said, you know, I trust my life within my team members' hands. I sat there in amazement, almost disbelief, but I was so proud of Michelle and Becky as this was going down. I don't care who you are, and I don't care how long you've been doing this. You're rattled somewhat.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of us to the core. Becky and Michelle carried on. They kept going after this thing. Molly's outside with Ian. I'm outside with my coffee, making sure that I'm safe. That's a joke, everybody. I went back into the house, and Becky and Michelle are pushing on. They're going to see this thing through. So I think a lot of it has to do is we've gotten so close to the clients. This is like win-win for the Gipper type thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're going to save these pets from dying. We're going to try to save Ian and Molly, even if it costs us our health, even if it costs us, you know, maybe our lives, if that makes any sense. They pushed on. I don't really understand everything that Michelle does, but everybody knows me, knows I'm a documenter. These guys, I build a team around people that are such talented people. They do all the things that I can't do. I even said to someone last night, I'm the weakest link. And I like it that way because that goes to show you how good this group can be. I watched them. I had a recorder. I was listening tentatively for fight back, is what I think was what Michelle said. Listen for fight back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, what the hell does that mean? So I'm kind of listening to someone say, you want to fight?
Yeah.
Right.
Becky had asked me if I was breathing heavy. I was standing in the kitchen. She was standing in the dining room when I turned around.
I had the really sensitive 360 mic and headphones on, and I couldn't tell where it was coming from, but it sounded like somebody heavy breathing. And sometimes you do that.
Yeah, what she's doing right now, I can hear her.
Yeah, I smoke. and I'm excited.
Yeah,
but
I know.
But this time I was a room and a half away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's...
I'm like telling him, hold your breath.
Right. She's telling me to hold my breath. I can barely breathe anyways. I think I said it's all on video. What the hell are you talking about? So I held my breath, believe it or not. And the breathing continued.
Oh, okay.
And then right after that, this entity on several occasions in this house has mocked my voice. It's mocked me.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds just like me talking, even when I'm not there.
Yeah.
It's scary.
In my voice, over talking me, it says, Harold, now I'm coming deaf and get you. I have been waiting for this thing to show up in my car,
driving across the country.
But you know what? In hindsight, Jen, it's just like a bully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's talking smack. It's talking shit on its way out the door.
It's getting thrown out the door.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's going to threaten everybody. It wouldn't have come after me to begin with. It may have come after Becky. It may come after a woman that was broke down like Molly. It wasn't coming after me. Because the first thing I said, well, I went right home, set up cameras. Come on, baby.
We do believe that we successfully evicted Maxwell.
Yeah.
There is activity going on now and in the last year, but it is not the same. Like I said, the whole 5 points thing, you know, do things just stream through there? Do they just pop up and decide to stick around? Because the activity that they were having after that was very different.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's the strange thing about this, Beck. And you and I have talked about this.
And we know it's not Maxwell. Right. Or there'd be worse things going on.
Mm-hmm.
This house went quiet. This sounds kind of strange because in the middle of all this, some bad things happened as well. Molly went back to riding horses and training. Ian went back to microbrewing. Molly started putting pictures on social media of her butterflies and the monarchs. Ian and I were talking. Everything seemed to be going much better.
Yeah, back to normal.
Absolutely. The Five Points awakened again. The house awakened again. Mm. This is really odd. Once it got active again, Molly did not have the strength or the energy to live through this again.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she moved out of the house. She says that I escaped
with
my life. To this day, she won't go back within two blocks of that house. She'll never return. The house sat empty for a few months. And it's not fair for me to say. Is Ian consumed? Is the house calling him back? Could he just not let go? Mm-hmm. The house sat empty, a cold November night. Ian's driving by the house. He can't get it out of his head.
Yeah.
The empty house is lit up like a Christmas tree. He stops and talks to the neighbors. He said the lights go on and off every night.
Oh.
There's somebody in the house. But I don't think it's a living person.
Yeah.
Ian claimed the house back that weekend.
So Ian,
back in. Wow. Ian has a friend, and I won't say her name, who has a small child right after he moved back in. We are really sure Maxwell's not there.
Okay.
The reason I know is I did it again. I sent Becky and Michelle into the house alone to confront Maxwell. I had to know in my heart that what we did was real. And we're not communicating with Maxwell, so we're not provoking him. We're not trying to bring him back. We're trying to go off to the new claims that Ian and his friend are speaking of in a roundabout way to make sure. The bottom line is, I knew if I put Becky in that house, he was going to come after her.
Yeah.
He did every time. He immediately went after Becky. This goofball also mistook Becky for Molly. And for some reason, he thought he could get away with it. And on several occasions, he tried to attack her. She just wasn't going to put up with it.
It could have been any female in that house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't have to look like Molly. They don't have to look like... There's a female in the house alone. You know what I mean? It's fair game.
Well, with your... The way you described it earlier with his past history, he picked on girls. Picked on women.
Exactly.
He didn't pick on men because... I don't want to sound racist or whatever you want to say. Or sexist. Feminist or sexist. Yeah. But... It's easier for a giant or big man to pick on a woman and them get intimidated, and that's what he fed on.
You want to hear something
strange?
Well,
we believe there is a man, woman, and a child all unrelated in that home right now. None of them point to Maxwell at all. The activity is completely different. The house looks and sounds different. Mm-hmm. I was in there when they were doing their 72-hour lockdown. The guys were... I had gone in there to help Harold break down. Or I just came, maybe I just brought you coffee, and I get off work early in the morning.
The important stuff.
The important stuff. And the noises, you know, was crazy. It was not like that before. That everything before was this, it seemed more sinister, you know, and harder to capture. You know what I mean? Yeah. You could just go in that house and stand there and just hear somebody shoving a box across the floor in the next room, and you absolutely know there's nobody in the next room. You look, and I'm like, who is in the house with you?
You know, speaking
and
of
he's
these...
like, nobody. Jeff's out in the garage.
Yeah.
Then Jeff came in the back door. I'm like, that was so...
Interesting.
And I spent 72 hours there. Speaking of those noises, this was kind of different than anything I've been accustomed to. When we went back to put Michelle and Becky in the house alone just to make sure, I wanted to find out who the new characters were, I brought Jeff from Schlachter from Outcast Paranormal with me, remember, and his friend Melissa. And I had Ian with me. It was a cold winter night, just this past late winter. We run tech in the truck. We had a whole house mic'd up. Jeff from Outcast has a great
so he could hear everything that was going on in the house, every level of the home.
Okay.
You know, they had multiple.
Right. So we're sitting in the automobile and watching Michelle up in the attic. And Becky in the cellar, that where there's no contamination, we can hear people talking to him. We can hear this man talking, and maybe a child and a woman. And then you could hear Michelle say, I think I hear somebody coming. There's somebody walking on the first floor. And then she would walkie-talkie down to Becky. Did you hear somebody come in the house? Becky, are you walking on the first floor? And you could see Becky in the cellar sitting in the rocking chair right where the object was thrown. And we're sitting there amazed in the truck of all this communication going on, and all these things are talking to the girls, and they're wandering and walking the house. We can hear the footsteps. Not one thing was recorded on any of the 12 audio recorders, nothing on any of the video cameras. To this day, I will never be able to explain it to you.
Yeah.
Jeff Schlachter from Outcast Paranormal sat in that truck and said, "Oh my God, look at the activity you're getting. You are going to document much more evidence tonight than you probably ever have."
Yeah. Nothing showed up on any
absolutely. Of the recordings. Remember, I came into the house the one time and I said, "Girls, keep going." Because you were going upstairs because you were wondering what the hell Michelle was doing. Michelle was on her way down the stairs wondering why you're contaminating like that. I didn't have a walkie. I mean, my walkie wasn't working. I couldn't radio into them. Guys, it's all paranormal. Don't do a thing. Keep it going. Remember the knocks on
you? We did get a child DVP. Isn't that when me and Michelle were splitting
going up the stairs? We finally caught one. You're right. We captured one light EVP.
But, you know, when the guys went in, another reason I suspected it wasn't Maxwell and that he was legitimately kicked out. The guys were being pushed. A guy had his headphones smacked on his head. Another one got touched on the leg. What else? On the stairway.
But right, you got things on the time frame a little bit. We come up with another genius idea.
That was the 72-hour lockdown.
No, I'm going before that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Once we realized that Maxwell was gone, if you remember, mm-hmm. and there were... This seemed much different. Noises playing, somebody's playing with the dog, sounds of a ball bouncing. I, for better or worse again, you know, I'm a genius, come up with great ideas. I thought it would be a good idea to bring some fresh investigators in that knew nothing about this house. Now, at this time, I know it's safe.
Yeah.
Because Becky and Michelle were in the house alone. We did another investigation right. after that. So I decided to take the Ghost Hunting 101 field trip to the house.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, great idea. Don't you remember Dan?
Oh, yeah, Dan, I worked that night.
Dan Cosmeyer was there. I don't know if anybody knows, Tugs knows who Dan is. Butch was there that night. Jeff from Outcast as well come out to help. I think Ryan from Outcast came out and helped us that night, too. You know what it's like. You help us with the Ghost Hunting. You're busy.
Yeah.
You know, you're just busy when someone says, this won't turn on, and you will hit the power button. And I just mean that funny because I do the same thing. The grumpy guy called one of our students a bitch.
Okay.
Dan was told to get the hell out. So we're analyzing the field trip. And I don't mean to be rude, but I never really, you know, intentively listen and analyze all the field trip stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just full of contamination.
Yeah. It's a learning experience for the students.
Dan calls me and says, you're going to want to listen to a couple of these sessions. Usually the field trip, I send it off to the students so you guys analyze it. Send it back.
Right.
Tell me if we got anything.
Well, that's part of learning how to be a ghost hunter. Right.
Dan said, all the downside.
Dan says, you're the goofball that sent them into the Maxwells. You're going to have to take responsibility for this. I said, well, there's nothing bad there. We just kind of got a grumpy guy and a little boy and a woman. That's what we've all confirmed that's what's in the house. And Ian's okay with all this. Mm-hmm. And so is his friend. We can all live with this. We're just going to continue to cleanse and bless the house and keep everything look. No, Harold, you really want to listen to this. You call one of the students a bitch.
Oh my
so I listened
God.
To him. It's like, holy crap. I guess to wrap this whole thing up, with Ian and I being on the same page in my group, I've learned so much from this. And isn't it funny how something so bad and dark that's haunting, to this day, Molly won't go back to that house.
Yeah.
She had just filmed an episode of Paranormal Survivor, and she did it in my home, not from the Maxwell home.
Okay.
She will not go back.
Yeah.
She broke down several times throughout the show. I think the world of this woman.
But you know what?
I'm proud of her.
She looks good.
Yeah.
She looks back great. To herself.
She looks younger. She looked healthy. Her eyes were shinier, sparkly. You know what I mean? I never saw her like that.
I'm heartbroken that Molly and Ian aren't together anymore, but that's really none of my business.
You know, it was a very stressful
time
that they went
through. Did she do anything to help cleanse herself of that?
Yes, and she's been seeing Carmen, believe it or not,
okay.
off and on. And Carmen, you know, is a massage therapist, and does spiritual Reiki. She's a certified Reiki healer, and Carmen's very good at things like that. The bottom line is, with all being said, and Molly being gone from the home now, and Ian being able to live with this, and I sat down with him, and thanked him for the field trip to the class. He thought it was important that these things could be learned by students, and it was a fun class, and it was okay. Maybe we didn't make a mistake, but we also still didn't have all the answers. We thought we had a man in there. No, we think we still have a child, but the child that they're seeing is much different than the 10-year-old Asian boy.
Yeah.
Yep. He's blonde, he's sickly looking.
Okay.
We've captured the EVPs of a woman that's wandering the house. Have you seen my son?
Oh, interesting.
Okay, well, now you're trying to put theories together. Could it be Maxwell's mom? And Maxwell's not there. We're sure of it. Mm-hmm. And now she's confused and lost.
Maxwell's mom died in the home, correct?
Yes, also from breast cancer. We took a break during... We did a 72-hour lockdown. I took Butch, our founder, Dan Kosmider, one of our lead investigators and videographer, Ryan from Outcast Paranormal, Jeff from Outcast Paranormal. Jeff was so intrigued by this case, I gave access to the house to Jeff for 72 hours, locked him in the house as well for the time slots that he wanted. We basically programmed this and scheduled it accordingly. I've learned more in that 72 hours, Joe, than the paranormal, and coming to terms with the haunting, and coming to terms with the house, and coming to terms with the entities there, than I could have learned in 10 years.
Oh, okay.
The house would awake and then go quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, there was times I went into that house and I couldn't breathe. And I told Becky, I was scared to death.
Yeah.
Even though I know Maxwell wasn't there, even though I think I know who I'm dealing with, I didn't trust it. I don't trust the house.
Yeah.
It's let me down before. It's done bad things to people. It's like a relationship. So it's the weirdest thing in the world. You're going to catch a video of me sitting on the couch in the middle of the night in total darkness, and I'm talking to the house.
Yeah.
I'm making deals with it. I'm coming to terms. I'm forgiving it for what it's done. Will it forgive me for what I've done? And you have no right to hurt people. And listen, maybe if Maxwell, if you're his mom, I'm sorry, but he is gone. And I forgive him. And I think you're not unlike any other mother. Well, he's not here. You don't have to. I was trying to come to terms with the entities. I was trying to get them to communicate with me within this 72 hours to tell me who they were, and maybe now I could help them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to stay here. There's no reason for Maxwell's mom to roam that house.
No.
These many years later, looking for a son who's not there. Listen, we can get people in here to tell you how to find him. The previous owners of the home, I talked to them. If you're the guy that's, coincidentally, his name was Harold as well. So with that is a weird conversation. It's almost like I was talking to myself. I'm trying to help them.
Yeah.
There's a place for them to go. We can bring people in to make this happen, but you have to tell me who you are. You have to tell me what your role is here, and that maybe that way we can help you. What an amazing 72 hours. Dan was trucking up the stairs, the same stairs that Molly was pushed down, the same stairs that Ian's...
Same spot.
Same exact step that Molly's, or Ian's new friend, was pushed on the stairs. Dan got his headphones knocked off and shoved into the wall. It happened.
Yeah.
Dan is a skeptic. If you could have heard his profanity laced, who the blank did this? I'll punch you in the blanket face, he said.
Oh,
and then you hear him say, wait a minute, I'm alone. Shortly afterwards, it happened to Jeff Schlachter. His was much different. There was a time that Jeff... And I don't think he'll mind me saying, maybe he won't even listen to this. Maybe he won't even tell him we did this. He was basically chased out of the house.
Yeah.
He had to creep so bad. He had spent so much time in the attic. And then when he went back in the house, it was like he was like a scared kid. I can't go in the attic. And his was profanity laced too. Oh my God. I'm coming out. And I thought, how can the house still do this? What the heck's going on? And then Jeff said it, and I disagree with Jeff. There's something in there hiding, and it's just waiting. I don't think so. We've done everything we can to bring everything out. I think we know the players. I went in late that night. I left the house. Now, I know if it's because it happened to you,
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen to me. I even told her. I freaked out.
Yeah.
I think I had an anxiety attack. What happened? Okay, I was afraid. I just left for a minute. I had to. Where'd you go? I went out in the backyard and just stood there. I had to get my bearings. When I went back in, I was fine.
Yeah.
I will never be able to explain to you guys what this whole thing was like. We captured, what do they say at work? A shit ton of paranormal activity again during the 72-hour lockdown. More importantly, I think Dan is a changed man to this day. Dan was a skeptic. He was touched.
Yeah.
Twice. During an SP spirit box up in the white room, addressing the grumpy man, he grabbed his leg. I have it on videotape, but sometime we'll never be able to show this
yeah.
on our live social. But I'm about to show it to you. You'll watch him jump. Okay. It freaked him out. All kidding aside, they were afraid at times. We were getting reactions. I think Dan and Jeff and Ryan from Outcast learned so much as well being sent into this home. To do whatever they want to do. I mean, obviously, you know, I was responsible for all this. Ian had just gave me the keys and said, it's yours. Learn as much as you can from this, for you could teach other people. And that was my goal here. I'm not sure what the lessons were learned. I'm not sure what I've gained from all this. Besides a wealth of knowledge, I don't know how I'm going to help other people with it. Here's the bottom line. I went back again yesterday. Ian was on Ghost Talk Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to, maybe I'm consumed. I don't think so. I think there was just so much to learn, especially me this late in the game. I realize I'm a student. I always will be.
Yeah, yeah.
What a blessing. I mean, I couldn't have said it completely clear. I couldn't thank Ian enough for allowing me to move into his home myself. Joe, what opportunity would you have a legendary haunted house like this and someone said, here's the keys, it's yours
yeah.
for a three
it
or four weekend? It doesn't happen
very often.
But you built that trust. You've yeah. been doing this house for years.
Well, right. I went back last night. I spent another hour and a half in the house. I think I'm done. I am exhausted. Becky can tell you. I go sleepless nights as I'm watching. I've even went back to watch the video, the hundreds and hundreds. 72 hours, Joe. We have 1,470 hours of
analyzing. Oh, my gosh.
Think about it.
Yeah.
I've come to the conclusion today. I'm in no rush.
Yeah.
You would never hear me say this in a million years. Do I really need to document and capture anymore? The client is okay.
Mm-hmm.
They can live with this thing now. The house is probably going to go quiet. It does.
Yeah.
The bad things are gone. We're going to... It's if you have a brand new car and you wash it and wax it on Sunday, it may storm on Wednesday, and guess what you're doing next week? You're washing and waxing again. You got to maintain it. They're going to have to maintain this home.
Yeah.
They're going to have to keep the darker, slower, negative energies out. But I think it can be done. We're sending in, and I know this sounds strange, a friend of ours who's a medium is going to go in the next week or two to confirm everything I'm saying. She doesn't know anything that I've said. She's an outside source who I trust. I'm very interested to see if she'll say some of the same things that I've documented and captured. But even if she doesn't, it's helping the client.
Yeah.
Ian wants it done.
And maybe helping whoever's there to
more
move on.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. More important than yeah. anything that's left
in the house.
She
can help them move on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
We think, Joe, to end it up, we definitely have a man there who can be grumpy. Doesn't mean it's dark and negative. I can remember my father, an old French-Canadian man, when you would go over to visit your mom sometimes during a hockey game, he would say, you two ladies, take that out to the kitchen. I'm trying to watch the game. Or better yet, he'd look me right at me and say, don't you have a home?
Yeah.
I think my father loved me. That's, just what he talked to me. That's what this entity does with Dan and Jeff. And sometimes he'll scare you. I think the pushing on the stairs is the child. I think he doesn't mean any harm. He's running up and down the stairs. He's playing with their dog.
Oh, yeah.
He's rolling a ball. He's going to run into you from time to time. You need to tell him to settle down. Anytime it's bedtime, you got to go quiet. They also have Ian's friend has a child who's 5 or 6. You don't want him to be afraid. I'm concerned about him, but something grabbed him one time, and I tried to tell Ian, that doesn't mean it's Maxwell. You know, if you put 2 5-6-7-year-old boys in the same room and they're playing with the same toys, there's going to be a little fight.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to get smacked.
Little scuffles.
And I think that's what's happened. I think the boy gets upset because you won't let him play with your car sometimes. I'm more concerned with the woman who still seems to be lost off in the distance looking for her son, asking us a bunch of questions. You know, when you do an EVP session, your job is to ask as many questions as you can and give them a chance to answer. Isn't it funny And all we're doing is hearing her ask us a ton of questions.
Yeah.
We're going to bring a psychic in, a medium, I'm sorry, to help answer those questions for her and maybe find a better path. And I think this house is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the Maxwell haunting's over. I don't think the story will ever end.
I think even it, if it becomes okay for a year, 2 years, mm-hmm. 3 years, I think it's going to light up again with something different. I think a couple of years from now, Ian's going to call us, and it's going to be a completely different activity mm-hmm. that is happening in the home. I just believe that. I mean, how do you start out with, you know, this, and then it's this, and then it's this, right. and this? I mean, you know, come on, there's people aren't just is like there, swarming to his home, you know, so a couple, coming in and have a party.
Yeah, a couple questions. One, when you exit an entity like Maxwell, who's that dark, one, where does he go? Does he go to the light, or does he just go somewhere else?
I think he just went somewhere else. We kicked him out of the home.
Yeah.
Does the cleansing wear off, and then does he return? Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like anything else, Jen,
mm-hmm.
this is some of my theories. That doesn't necessarily mean they are the truth. I think when you do evictions or exorcisms or things of that nature, or trying to rid entities or dark energies from a home, you're riding a bubble. Einstein's theory of energy, there is no beginning, there is no end to it. You cannot create it, you cannot destroy it, although it can be weighed and measured and change form. Therefore, do you truly get rid of the... There is no beginning, there is no end. It would be unfair for me to say, I've gotten rid of that energy.
Well, I guess what you mean is you moved it along.
Moved it along.
You can move it.
Well, yeah. it's
is it in the neighbor's house now, right? You know,
here's the thing, Jen.
Is it in the woods?
It's here somewhere with us.
Mm-hmm.
I think more importantly, if this makes any sense, the Maxwell haunting has been first and foremost a teacher. We have been nothing more than students. In my heart, talking to Maxwell for the thousands of hours that we did, and I wasn't really going to say this, I sat down in the house and I had a one-on-one, and I don't want to call this an EVP session because it really wasn't that. I was in there alone. I got comfortably in a chair, and I said, listen, I need to talk to you man to man. These things have happened. These are the things you've done. Do you really want to be like this in the afterlife? You have every opportunity to change this energy level, to understand what you've done. You, I think your mother's looking for you.
Yeah.
I think your grandmother's looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
They have forgiven you. Listen, Ian has forgiven you. Molly hasn't because she's gone. But you can't ask for forgiveness for her, just like any of the other people that you've hurt in your life. This is a prime opportunity for you to change. It's never too late. Not in this life. And my theory is not in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. So I believe his energy is probably still here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's I'm not the same person since this investigating started. I don't think any entity in that home, and this probably sounds crazy to you, I don't think any of us are the same person that we were when this thing began in 2012.
And then my next question would be, if an entity moves on or moves out, does that open up space for something else to come in? Like, okay, this space was occupied by this energy or this entity. It's gone now. I'm looking for some, you know, I've been kicked out of some other place, and now I'm going to go in where there are other entities or an open space.
Well, unfortunately, Jen.
Or they'll attach to a person.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think sometimes there is a measure of truth to portholes that are in homes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a bigger truth in the energy that Einstein has already proved. It's scientific proof. I think there's a lot to be said. And I think some of our spirits, Jen, I mean, first and foremost, I'm not going to haunt the cemetery when I die. I'm going to go home, turn the TVs on and off at home. I'm going to drive Becky absolutely crazy because that's what I'm going to do. But I guess to answer your, there are so many platforms. Yeah, there's so many platforms, if this makes any sense, for it to use to come back in.
Mm-hmm.
They call them portholes, Ouija boards, seances, EVP sessions. And there's so many avenues. I really truly, and I don't think any of us really truly have anything more than a theory. I think for me to give you a definitive answer would be nothing more than my theory. I thought in my heart, just like we did at the Windhurst case, mm-hmm. something bad and evil was in there. We worked our butts off to get rid of it, and I firmly believe we got rid of it. Within a week or two, it was back. At that time, I blamed Ouija boards. I blamed it on the clients. They swore they didn't do it. We went back in that particular case, everybody in that home moved out. Nobody was going to take that again.
Yeah.
That's a whole different show.
Yeah.
I don't truly have a definitive answer for you besides we thought there was a porthole in this house. Some of our group members still think that there's a porthole. They think that maybe they helped it close. I firmly believe the opposite. I think it has everything to do with ley lines, and we're never going to stop the paranormal activity that's going on in the Five Points area ever.
Yeah.
We're never going to see it all come to an end. And it's going to reawaken.
And that's what I was thinking too when Ken was asking that question. I'm thinking maybe the house gives him that power. And when you kick him out of the house, he has no power either to come back in
or
to hurt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with the portal thing, I honestly think, and I've thought it a bunch of times, we talk about the Five Points all the time being ramped up and ley lines and all that stuff, but that might be the spot in the Five Points that's either calling people to the Five Points or spirits to the Five Points or something huge happened right there.
We discussed it at one point, trying to find somebody that had a geomagnetometer so we could test.
Yeah, we talked about that.
We're very expensive.
Yeah.
I guess
people just don't have them sitting in their garage.
Yeah, I know.
I guess my best answer for that is I think spirits and entities will always find a source. And there's just hundreds and hundreds of sources, like we said, from Ouija board seances, from you and I watching Ghost Adventures this Saturday. There's so many sources that we probably aren't even aware of.
Oh.
Does that make sense? We're constantly opening up doors and inviting them in.
Exactly.
And a lot of times we don't even know we are. Mm-hmm. Like she said, attachments.
And that goes back to the same thing. Every time you leave these locations, you have to say your exit prayer, whether you're religious or not, say something.
We do, but I know we bring things home.
Yeah.
You know, I've gotten EVP. We were doing a ghost talk show, and we did a 5-minute short promo because we were doing it from the new office space. Mm-hmm. We had moved the office into another room. And so we were listening to it, and we got an EVP.
That's amazing. Help me.
That just happened a few weeks ago.
Wow. We get the same thing
here. And we're like, what?
I mean.
And so we were telling people, okay, listen to this, you know, and they're like, wow.
Well, the electronic
equipment.
But
they don't know what kind of help they want. I tried to do a follow-up session, because if somebody says, help me, obviously, they're not just throwing that out for no reason. Yeah. But I couldn't get a name. All I could get was creepily saying, Packy. Oh, great.
Yeah,
I quit listening.
Well, this is interesting.
The car will never run out of gas if it's idling in a gas station, you know. And ghosts will never leave if it's constantly being fed.
Right. And so we ignore it now.
What's interesting too, just you know, as a side note about the Five Points area, the spirit that showed up in my bedroom, a male who claims to have been murdered in Burger King's parking lot in the 80s, which I can't find any information on, so I can't verify that.
Was it anywhere by the trail?
No, we're talking Five Points area.
Yeah, my house. So I'm.
I know of a murder.
So he
in
says.
The 80s.
He says that he travels along the corridor. That was his words.
Really?
Travels along the corridor.
You think that's linked to the Five Points? You think that's what he was?
Well, I'm in the Five Points. Right.
I mean, that's the corridor.
And we talk
about
it being a
and
a
he
trade
it was a. Is a protective of me.
Awesome.
So I don't know.
Isn't it funny how sometimes you have entities and you don't want them to leave?
I had a student
one time, Joe, at Ghost Hunting 101. Remember? We were at the field. I think it was, might have been the yacht club. You were with us. Do you remember if it was there? I demand that one of these ghosts attach himself to me. I'm not married to live by myself and I need friends. She was wandering the place trying to get somebody to go home with her. I'm thinking,
and buy somebody a couple drinks. You might have better luck, you know? Like,
that was the night I passed out in the bathroom. At 3 in the morning, I woke up. I didn't feel good. I got the cold sweats.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. I got the belt line cramps. So, not to sound nasty or nothing, but I thought I had to go to the bathroom. Went in the bathroom, got super cold sweats. Next thing I know, I hear the heater vent rattle and realize it was because my head hit it. And I woke up And oh my God, Joe. I called the emergency squad. They came and they said there's nothing wrong with you. Yeah. That was the exact same night we were at the yacht club.
You should have told them to film it. Could be on the new show.
I know.
Paranormal 911.
Calls me at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I don't know why. I was like, he called and I was like awake. I'm like, what's up? And he's like, I just passed out. I'm like, what?
I was like, do you think I should call the emergency squad? And then I started shaking real bad.
I'm like, and I'm yes. Like,
no, I didn't ask if I should call the emergency squad. I was like, should I call off work?
Yeah, maybe we should take the day off work tomorrow.
Ghost drained all my energy. I can't come in today.
Isn't it funny? You know how the paranormal is and,
yeah.
And the effect that entities can have on people, the different effects it can have mm-hmm. on people? I don't know. I don't think I'll ever have the answer to anything, will I?
No.
And that's why we keep doing it.
I don't know. Yeah, like being so. In Mansfield all weekend, I just felt horrible all weekend. I had this pit in my stomach all weekend. It just, and still don't. Now I'm just feeling myself again.
Do you think that maybe these things happen to you because you're somewhat more of a beacon or a lighthouse or sensitive or mm-hmm. medium or things?
I'm empathic.
There's a good name for it. You know, I'm about as sensitive as the microphone.
You and Joe, man.
I mean, I just don't have those. I don't have those qualities.
Yeah.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
You know what? Sometimes I think I'm lucky because of it. I mean, you know, some of the best.
I was very concerned about going to that location because of the attachment I received at another haunted prison and being in the emotional state that I am because I had recently lost somebody that was dear to me. And have been in this, you know, that mm-hmm. that weekend state where, yeah.
Somewhat of kind of a funky that was fog.
Depressed. I mean, it's just straight out depression and sadness, you know, like, and you know that the spirits will.
So do you feel them or can you actually see them? Or is it kind of like you sense them?
I sense them. I have seen spirits. I've seen full body apparitions, but I don't see them all the time. You know, I've only seen it twice, I'll say. But I can feel, like, if I can walk into some place and there's something going on, I'll be able to sense it. Like, right now, I'm feeling something standing behind my back.
Yeah. See, Carmen and Michelle are kind of like
and now
that.
I'm getting, like, even real
Butch
hot.
Is, you know what's really funny? Like, the older Butch
might
gets
be hot flash. I don't know. I'm 48 now, right?
Like, I just think that's amazing to me because,
yeah.
I mean, I can walk right into a snake pit and ask everybody where are the snakes?
Yeah.
Butch, the older he gets, is becoming more. I've noticed in the last mm-hmm. handful of investigations, he'll say, I think the kitchen is the hot spot, or I think this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's so in tune with it when you do something for so long, you know, like you understand. Like if you went into a house and you were a plumber, and you probably sense where the water leak is coming from, right? So, like, I think, you know, your training gives you that, even though you
so
don't.
So, do you think it helps you or hinders you?
It definitely helps because you can be aware and proactive if there is something darker.
It can hinder you depending on the effect it has on you, I would assume.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I take it back. I am a bit sensitive. Like, we go into a location, I usually know where the coffee room is. I can sense that.
I feel it.
Yeah.
Smell it. No, but, you know, it just going back to the whole Five Points area. Definitely a ley line. It has to be.
It's got to be.
It's got to be, in the words of that entity, a corridor
mm-hmm.
that they travel up and down.
I firmly believe there's something much bigger to this that we have no knowledge of at this time. Isn't it funny? Just like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
The more you study, the less you know. And it's going to be amazing.
The more questions you get.
Yep. It's going to be amazing to me. And I'll probably be dead and gone by this. Science is going to answer, and history is going to answer a lot of these questions, I believe, in the very near future.
Yeah.
Just because of the interest in the research and, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Well science is now equipment. Accepting
right.
other beliefs.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You know.
We've come a long way. Isn't it amazing?
Oh, yeah.
It's you remember, it wasn't, but 12 years ago, you go in the library. They asked for a book on the paranormal, especially if you said shadow people.
They're like,
if you said shadow people, the librarian left the counter.
Yeah.
But if you said something about ghosts, they would point in the left back corner in the dark.
Right. Oh, yeah.
The bottom shelf. She said there's 3 or 4 books there. By the time you went back there and got your 3 or 4 books to come up, it was a different librarian. You got this nut job. And now, come on, there's museums built for this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we want to thank you for stopping by. This is awesome.
You're welcome. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you guys
Harold
are
and Becky from Toledo, Ohio Ghost Hunter Society.
Thanks, Joe and Jen. I really appreciate being on the show again. More importantly, it's nice to see you guys. It always is.
It is. Yeah. I know. It's always nice to see me.
It's a love fest. But, no, you know, what you guys are doing is important, and especially the classes that you guys hold. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that, you know, because I've been through it and Joe came out once.
Well, I've been wanting to go to it, but it's like my life is just so busy right now.
You know why Joe doesn't come out. Joe knows if he comes out. I'm immediately going to announce our next speaker for the next 30 minutes.
I just want to sit back in the corner.
Awesome. Yeah, the classes are a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's super educational for anybody who wants to learn something about it. You know, go to the TOGS website, and you can get all the information that you need on there. Can you give them the website?
Yes, Ghost Hunting 101. We'll be back this June. Ghost Hunting 102 will follow immediately afterwards, and that's in August. You can go to owensworks.com or 567-661-7357. If you call that number, tell Jody I said hello. And that's where you can sign up. It's as easy as that. Jen, you took the class. Listen, we're all students. This class is fun, and it's followed by a field trip. And I think most of us probably take this class, including me. I want to go on a field trip. I want to go to a haunted location.
Yeah, so if you become a student, you'll be going to a majorly haunted location.
But you know,
and Harold will put you in there, and he'll be out with coffee.
They do look forward to that field trip, but we give them a little bit of ammunition so that they can actually capture something.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It was fun. It was amazing. It was very good times.
Before we let you go, like we said, we spent the weekend in Mansfield, Ohio, at the Ohio Prison. At the prison. It was a weird being there. It was really weird. It's the first time I've ever been there. So, I mean, I love architecture and all that. And I went in kind of like, God, this is so cool. And we did meet someone that was an actual prisoner there. Mm-hmm. And he explained to us, you know, a lot of people say, well, they come into these places and they're like, they're so cool. And he's like, you don't realize how violent, dark, nasty this place was. And I was talking to him in the main foyer where we were at. There's giant windows. And I said, you know, obviously those windows weren't there when it was open. He says, yeah, the curtains were still here. But they're blue. They're different curtains. Obviously, they replaced them because they're cleaner or whatever. But he says, people don't realize, you go into these places, these prisons, and it's such a violent, dirty, nasty, loud place that he says he would wake up in the middle of the night hearing doors open and guards beating the crap out of, you know, prisoners. So you go into these places and you think they're really cool and that, yeah. They are cool for the architecture and the history, but there's a lot of dark energy in these places, and you really have to be careful. I mean, we did our whole show there. We did not record one interview.
No, we were both like this, though.
Because people would come up to us and talk to us, and we didn't get as many people coming up and telling us their stories, but a lot of people came up to us and were like, you know, we're recording today. Do you want to be on the show? And every single one was, oh, no, I can't do that. Yeah, I can't.
It was weird. Yeah. Like, it was a totally weird vibe. It was like, normally we're engaging with a lot. You know, we have interviews. We're engaging, and it just was different. It was a different vibe there. It was cool, but I don't know.
And I went outside, and there's a big gate outside that was part of the movie Air Force One, and it's big stone pillars with metal gate, and that's the scene where the general was killed running through the courtyard. And I went up to it and I knocked on it. It's all plastic. It's like, this is kind of cool, you know? But we want to thank a few people for the Parapsychon. I keep saying the wrong name. Yeah. But it was a great event. We had a great time. I want to thank Greg and Kathy Fatetic from Tracy Ghost Hunters who put it on. They did an amazing job.
Yeah, it was great. They treated the vendors very, very kindly. Yeah. Yep.
Got cheese.
Yes, there was a lot of cheese being thrown at us. But no, we just, you know, thanks to everybody who stopped out to the booth. I know some people trucked out just to see us, which was amazing.
That's
not tooting our own horn or anything, but, you know, Don and Kelly from Fringe stopped by, Daniel Klass from the Hinsdale House, and Eric Karsten, Eddie and Mark from Big Dog Paranormal. You know, everybody on the OSR team from the Reformatory were just amazing and great to us. Yosina and John and Nadine, from Black Swamp, Stop It Out, Vanessa Salazar, Victoria Kempton. Thank you for the reading. I learned some very interesting things about what's going on in my house. Chad and Heather from Erie Shores were there as well. And
Chip Coffee. For stopping by.
Yes. Thanks for walking by and
said hi to me.
He didn't say hi to me.
Oh.
You know, I stalk him, right? Jennifer from Tops also.
I want to say thank.
And Barbie St. John.
Oh, Barbie, yeah.
The beautiful right Barbie. Yes, she was amazing.
I want to thank Sarah from 111 Paranormal who gave me an awesome Bigfoot pen.
Yes. Joe got treats.
Very cool.
So, anyways, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Becky and Harold, for coming in. Always love to hear your stories. You guys are welcome back anytime. And anything you need from us for the class, you know, or other, just let us know.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much for allowing us to come on.
Yeah.
It's a blast.
These are true friends, and it's just always great to see you guys. So thank you once again.
All right. Thank you. And everybody, go up on our Facebook page. We have a huge announcement already up there.
Yep. Save the date.
Save the date, October 12th.
Toledo, Ohio. Toledo Bigfoot and Paranormal Conference.
Yep. Bigfoot.
Be there.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We will leave you with a little bit of crud. The song is Glue, and have a great day.
You can't.